This is Cruise Radio.
I cruise a lot and I always sail with travel insurance. You should too. Get a free quote today at tripinsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida.
This is
Cruise Radio.
Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio. Happy to have you here, my friend. On this week's show, a review of the newly refurbished Carnival Vista. Staff writer Richard Sims on deck with cruise news and tackling some of your questions, especially those big stories in the news over the past week about the bridge collapse and the folks who didn't make the ship in Africa. We've received a lot of questions about those regarding travel insurance. So Dan Skilkin, president of tripinsurance.com, is here to unpack some of that for us. We'll kick things off, as we always do, with staff writer Richard Sims. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Doug.
Starting things off with those cruise passengers that got left behind.
Listen, Doug, I know you're very big on kind of creating your own shore excursion or going with independent shore excursions as opposed to those offered by the cruise line. And that is a great way to save money. And some of the trips that you've, you know, helped me arrange stuff on, it's fantastic. But it can also lead to what happened with the passengers who were sailing on Norwegian Dawn. Long story short, a group of people went the independent excursion route and they wound up arriving back to the ship late. The excursion provider tried to contact the ship to tell them what was going on. And at the end, they did not get back on board the ship. And it turned into a little bit of a nightmare for them because they went to the next port to catch up, but the boat wasn't able to dock at the next port because of the tides. So they had to go to the next port. It turned into a several day journey. And of course, all of this had to be done at their own expense. Norwegian released a statement that sums up perfectly what happened. They said it was an unfortunate situation, but guests are responsible for ensuring they return to the ship at the published time. I think the thing that kind of annoys me about this story is that these people have gone out there to every newsletter out they were on today. They've been talking to various newspapers, talking about this situation as if to blame the cruise line. And really, the cruise line is not to blame here. You know, the cruise contract makes it very, very clear that if you are not back at the port at the scheduled time, you know, they have an agenda to keep. They have thousands of people on board who all, you know, have appointments at the next port. If you don't get back in time, they will leave you. So, you know, they can go to as many outlets as they want complaining about it. But at the end of the day, Norwegian is really not responsible for them being left behind.
Our next story involves people who are left behind, but under completely different circumstances.
Okay, so in this case, the ship in question was the Carnival Horizon, and the guests were part of a group who were taking part in something called the Twin Cities Takeover 90s Throwback Cruise. I want to see how they fit all that on the t-shirts that you always see people wearing on these group tours. Anyway, several of the people who were supposed to be taking part in this got to the terminal and found out that they did not have a stateroom booked. There was other people in the rooms that they thought were theirs. The organizer, a travel agent named Monica Faulkner, arrived at the port and said, "Hold on, let me go on board and check this out. Let me find out what's happening." Well, cut to, you know, like if this was a sitcom, we'd do a slam cut to her on deck waving as the ship sailed away. And she left those people behind with absolutely no explanation. How many people exactly were affected is a little bit in question. In a statement that she released, that Monica released, she said 26. Some stories were set up to 50 people. She also said that some people opted to stay behind because, you know, other members of their party were not going to be able to get on board. She made in her statement several excuses for how this happened. She did take responsibility, but even as she took responsibility, she sort of rubbed salt in the wound by saying, "We have a big group on board and they are having an amazing time." Yeah, thank you, but I'm one of the people you left behind. I don't necessarily want to hear that. She did indicate that any further statements on this topic would be coming from her attorneys. So I don't think we've heard the last of this yet.
Turning now to a Norwegian cruise ship where people found out after they boarded that some venues wouldn't be open.
Yeah, we're talking about the Norwegian Viva. And this is kind of surprising to me because it's such a new ship. But they sent a letter to guests who are scheduled to sail on the April 7th transatlantic from Puerto Rico to Lisbon, Portugal. And the note basically said that during the cruise, they were going to be making upgrades to several areas, which meant that those venues would be closed. And that included like the Speedway bar. The Speedway, the go-karts are still open, but the bar overlooking it is going to be closed, as well as they have this whole area on this new fleet of ships called the Stadium, where they have various games, like a really cool ping pong that you play inside a tube, things like that, foosball, that will be closed. The two of the pay venues, which are the miniature golf course and the Bullseye, where you can play darts in like a living room setting, those are going to be closed as well. They said that they hope to get this, you know, done early enough that it can be opened while they are still on board, because it's quite a long trip. I think it's I don't remember how many days it is exactly. I want to say 19 days, but that sounds crazy. My favorite part was that they said, quote, "As part of our commitment to continuously offer extraordinary vacation experiences for our guests around the world," you know, other guests, not you, you're not going to have these experiences, but we are doing this to make future guests' trips a little bit more enjoyable. So, but while we're talking about Norwegian, let me slip in another story here. Because this week, Norwegian also announced that because of a variety of reasons, they were canceling a bunch of sailings that are scheduled to take place between January and October of 2025. So if you're booked during that period on any of these ships, you might want to make sure you're still booked. The ships are Norwegian Jade, Norwegian Epic, Spirit, Pearl, Sky, Viva, and Star. Again, these are trips between January and October of 2025. Not all trips, but some trips. And some of it is because of ship repositionings. Some of it is because of, you know, the ships were scheduled to go to areas that they're not going to anymore because of internal conflicts, things like that. So, like I said, if you're booked on any of those ships, just kind of take a look and make sure that you're still, that you still have a cruise. Luckily, it's not until 2025, so you have a little time to sort of come up with a backup plan.
Last week, we found out that Carnival was going into Norfolk after the Baltimore Bridge collapsed, but we finally know Royal Caribbean's plans now.
Yeah, they will basically be doing the exact same thing. Royal Caribbean has Vision of the Seas, which normally sails out of Baltimore. At this point, nobody really knows exactly how long the cleanup is going to take, when the harbor will be reopened. So for right now, Vision of the Seas will be doing the exact same thing as Carnival's ship. They will be sailing out of Norfolk, Virginia. In the case of Carnival, because they had a ship at sea when all this happened, they basically had to hire a fleet of buses to take people from, you know, from Norfolk when the ship got back to Baltimore, and then the next group of people from Baltimore down to Norfolk. But they won't necessarily have to do that for Vision of the Seas or for future Carnival cruises, because there's been enough time now that people know, okay, you need to make arrangements to get yourself to this new port. But, you know, that's the big question now, is how long the cleanup will take and when things will be able to return to normal for those, not only those ships, but all of the other ships, including, you know, a lot of cargo ships that sail in and out of the Baltimore port normally.
All right, staff writer Richard Sims, as always, thank you, my friend.
Glad to be here.
As Richard just wrapped up for us, a lot happening in the news with the bridge and the people getting left in Africa. And we received a lot of listener questions about how travel insurance would impact this. Joining us on the line is the president of TripInsurance.com, Dan Skilken, to unpack some of these questions. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Thanks, Doug.
Arnold has the first one. He says, how does travel insurance impact guests who are medically debarked or need to be evacuated from a port of call or from a cruise ship?
Your travel insurance covers your medical bills on board the ship. And if anybody has experienced any kind of having to go to the infirmary on board the ship, you discover pretty quickly that it's very expensive, no matter what, even to have your hand bandaged. It's pretty expensive. And that is covered by your travel insurance, as well as medical evacuation. even if you're required to be airlifted off the ship by a helicopter, if they're out at sea, et cetera. If it's an emergency and it's urgent, your travel insurance covers medical evac. Now, a lot of people end up getting offloaded from the boat to a local hospital in the nearest port, et cetera, to treat an urgent medical problem. And those medical bills are covered by the travel insurance, as well as medical evacuation from that location to get you back to the United States if needed based on your condition.
To take this a step further, how would this play out for the woman on Norwegian Dawn who had that stroke, the 80-year-old woman who had to be medically debarked?
The woman that they took off the ship, clearly the ship wasn't capable of treating her on board. And so, okay, it's not uncommon to have to be sent to a hospital there. But it seemed that she was stuck there in the hospital and it was going to be extremely expensive to get her home. And I can't tell from the article whether she had travel insurance, but I'm suspecting that she didn't. Because had she had travel insurance, there is a toll-free number that you call as a part of every plan that provides traveler assistance. They will coordinate your medical care from the United States with a doctor in the United States communicating with doctors in the local country. If translation services are needed, they provide that. And if the doctors decide that the best place for you to get care and urgently is back in the United States, they will send a medical evac airplane to go pick her up. And typically those airplanes fly from the United States over to, in this particular case, Africa, with a doctor and a nurse on board to take care of the patient. They cover the ambulance cost to get them to the airport and they fly them home. And quite often those medical evacs happen in less than 48 hours from the time that they're scheduled and they need to go. So she would have been covered for that if she had had travel insurance, which is just, that's without question, the most expensive possible claim. And the biggest risk that you have is that if I have to be medically evac to get home, that could cost $250,000. And so this is one of the reasons why travel insurance is just critical to buy. And it's not that expensive, particularly for the medical coverage and the medical evac.
And another question coming from the Africa situation, does trip insurance cover you if you don't make it back to the ship on time and you need to catch up with it at a different port? This comes from Mark.
Well, I read the article on the situation in Africa. And it sounds like they booked their own tour. Not with the cruise company, and did not make it back in time. And then the Coast Guard tried to get them out to the ship, and the ship didn't have to board them. I'm not exactly sure what the circumstances or what the seas were like or how they were going to make that transport. But it's not like the average cruise ship can just drop a rope ladder down to somebody on a boat. So you're sort of looking at this situation where they've missed the ship and now they've got to figure out how to catch back up with the ship. Travel insurance will cover for a common carrier delay that causes you to miss the ship. So for instance, if you're flying into a port and the flight comes in late, and typically there's some time restrictions on that. In other words, like a 3-hour delay, et cetera. You can't plan your trip so that you only had a half an hour to get to the ship, but assuming that you have enough time to actually make that transfer and you're delayed by a common carrier like an aircraft being delayed, then the insurance will cover the lost days of the ship on the ship, as well as the extra cost to get you to the next port, fly you to the next port. But in a case where you're already on the trip, the common carrier is actually the ship. And in this particular case, because you're at fault, you're typically not covered. So a great example of this is, well, what if my outbound flight of my airline wasn't late? I was late getting to the airport, or I was delayed getting through security because I didn't give myself enough time to get through security, and I missed my outbound flight, and it was my fault. It wasn't a delay of the common carrier. The insurance company in that particular case is not going to cover the loss of the days of your cruise or the extra cost to get you to the ship. So this is another example where if it's your fault, I think, Doug, they traveled through four or five different countries. It was very expensive for them to finally catch up with the boat. All of that expense would have been borne by them. It would not be covered by travel insurance in that particular case.
Okay, so I get I would be on the hook for everything, but if I was, let's just say I was in Nigeria, I missed the ship, it's my fault. Could the claims number help me as far as maybe connecting me with an embassy or anything like that?
Absolutely. That's the traveler assistance phone number that comes with your travel insurance plan. They're there to help you in those kinds of emergencies. So in this particular case, stuck in Africa, there was evidently it was very hard to find somebody that spoke English. The travel assistance phone number I would call, because they will get translators on the line for you. And they can even help make reservations or find you transportation or figure out how to get you to the next port. They're just not going to cover the cost, but they're there to help you rebook that.
Last question here comes from Amy. We just returned from Carnival Legend, and what a nightmare, she's referring to, because of the bridge collapse and the ship had to change ports. So she asks, if a cruise line has to return a ship back to a different port because of a disaster like the bridge in Baltimore, would a travel insurance policy have helped us? To be clear, the cruise line did provide us shuttle buses from Norfolk, where we returned back to Baltimore, where we originated.
Yeah, but I'm guessing that was probably a 6-hour bus ride. Mm-hmm. It was going to take them a while. So cruise ships are considered common carriers as far as the travel insurance companies are concerned. So any misconnection of a common carrier is covered by your travel insurance, and there's typically a listed misconnection benefit. Many of our plans have $1,000 or $1,500 of misconnection benefit, which will cover the extra cost to buy a ticket in order to get to your, you know, back to where the ship was supposed to dock or intersect to get you home. Because, you know, people may have flown in to Baltimore, so now how am I going to get home if I don't take that bus? Can I get plane reservations through Chicago or whatever that will ultimately get me home? Will it cover the cost of the extra travel expenses to modify my flights home because the ship didn't make it to the port it was intended? And yes, that is typically covered by the misconnection benefit. If you have to spend the night in that wherever the ship landed before you can take the next flight, that is typically covered by travel delay, and there's an additional benefit per person. It's typically $250 to $400 or $500 a day per person that will cover the extra expenses for your hotel, your food, and your local transportation in order to get you back to the airport, and then you could fly home. So yes, you could take Carnival's offer of a 6-hour bus ride and lose a whole day getting back, but you don't have to. Your travel insurance will cover that extra expense.
Dan, if anyone has any additional questions that maybe we didn't cover today and wants to reach out, how can they get a hold of you?
The easiest way is to send us an email at support@tripinsurance.com. We're willing to help you even if you haven't bought your travel insurance from us. That's why we're here. We love to answer questions or help people as best we can. Feel free to reach out that way. We do have a phone number, but we answer emails at very odd hours and on the weekends, et cetera. So the easiest way to get a hold of us is send us a quick email with your questions.
President and CEO of TripInsurance.com, Dan Skilkin. Dan, as always, thank you so much for your time.
Doug, thank you for having me on.
Have a question or a comment for the show?
Yeah!
Send an email or voice memo to Doug@cruiseradio.net.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer, if you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out TripInsurance.com.
Just back from a cruise? Let's talk about it. Email Doug at cruiseradio.net.
Julia and her husband just returned from an 8-night Southern Caribbean cruise aboard Carnival Vista, the newly refurbished Vista out of Port Canaveral, Florida. And Julia joins us on the line. How you doing, Julia?
I'm doing great, Doug. I hope you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for offering to give this review of Vista, a ship fresh out of dry dock within the past 30 days. So before we get to the ship itself, we'll take a step back here. Y'all are up in the Carolina area. So give me some pre-cruise thoughts. What made y'all want to take this 8-night on Vista?
Well, we have two little girls and we are always looking, not always, but sometimes looking for a vacation from being parents. And that's what this, we found, we were on our way on another trip somewhere. And my husband was like, look up some cruises, Julia. And it, when he says that, I don't need any more permission than that. So I was go. And I found this one and it was really interesting looking. We like the ports. And we usually cruise out of Charleston, but we, the Carnival isn't, and we've cruised Carnival before. So Carnival isn't renewing their contract with the Charleston port. So we're not going to be able to cruise out of there anymore. So we knew we needed to really experience cruising out of some different ports. So we took this opportunity to cruise out of Port Canaveral.
Being in the Carolinas, you're like borderline drive / fly. So what do y'all do?
We flew for sure. Mm-hmm. We flew out of Raleigh the day before and stayed a night in the port area. We were closer to the airport. Next time we'd rather stay, I think, closer to the port itself. But yeah, we stayed the night before. We're not car riders for that long. I know. In the Facebook group, tons of the people were doing it, but that's not for us.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So you go to board Carnival Vista. How was the embarkation process once you got to the terminal? And how long did it take you from the curb to the actual ship?
Total from the curb to the ship, I timed it. It took us 18 minutes.
Nice.
It would have taken us probably a few minutes less if I hadn't made my husband take those hokey pictures in front of the ship when you're coming on, but I love that sort of stuff. But it was pretty easy. We cruised right after the ships reopened after the pandemic. And I would say that this was even simpler. There were, drug sniffing, golden retrievers in the Port Canaveral, port terminals, but otherwise, it was pretty smooth. The thing that I thought was funny is that typically when we cruised out of Charleston, if you met anybody on your shuttle from your airport or your hotel or anything that was going on a cruise, they were going on the same cruise with you. Mm-hmm. So this is going to make me seem kind of like country mouse come to town, but like all the people we would meet were going on a cruise, but they were all going on different cruises. So this was, it was a brave new world.
Yeah, certainly. You, once you got on the actual ship itself, what were your first impressions of Carnival Vista?
Well, Carnival Vista is beautiful. They did a great job during dry dock, you know, just eliminating wear and tear. There were only like a couple of spots over the time that we were on her that we saw any type of anything that looked like it had been worn or used. I think the main thing that people always talk about with the Vista is that the funnel in the middle with the LED screens that they changed the pictures. And that is really impressive. Personally, I have a heart for some of the older ships with the big atriums. So this one felt a little closed off. But she really was beautiful, and they did a lot of work to her in dry dock to make her just even, I mean, just more functional and pretty and all of that. So
I'm curious, and you might not know the answer to this, but like before your cruise, did you do any kind of like, you know, watching ship tours on YouTube where you could tell, oh, this was actually replaced or changed during the dry dock?
Yes, Doug, you don't realize this, but watching ship videos is my part-time job before I go on a cruise. So I know that the big thing that they redid was the Lido Marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I've heard before people on your show and on other shows mention on the Vista that it wasn't an island system before. And so the buffet really got like a lot of congestion and a lot of bottlenecks. But now it is an island system. And so that was the big thing that they changed. They moved, there's now a non-smoking casino, which we went to a good bit. And so that was nice. There's no longer a cherry on top, ice cream, but they moved I think they moved the location of where that candy store had gone. And then they moved and expanded some of the kids clubs as well during the dry dock. And they added, it was I think it was just the sports bar, but they made it into a Heroes bar. And we spent a good amount of time there. As far as like staterooms, I know that they added the like motion lights in the floor when you step down. So they like when you get up in the middle of the night, it's the lights would turn on when you were walking along the hallway. It had been reported that there were night lights in the rooms, in the bathrooms, but that at least in our experience wasn't the case. All we really saw was those motion lights in the floor. And then they also said there were rumors that there were the like card operated soda machines were put in. And they actually haven't, as far as at the time of my sailing, they hadn't made it on. There was like a problem with the installation or the plumbing. And so those are allegedly coming. But those are the things that I gathered from my research.
I wasn't expecting that much. So that's pretty cool. You knew all that. Wow. Impressive.
Or it just makes me look like a big nerd.
No, that's awesome. So let's talk about the stateroom you had on this 8-night cruise. So what kind of stateroom did you have and what did you think of it throughout the week?
So we had a premium, I think it's called a premium view balcony. It's the last balcony aft side. So it kind of wraps around a cruise staircase. And as a result, like our bed faces the windows instead of facing like the wall, and the bathroom is off of that is off of the bedroom instead of being off of the hallway. Mm-hmm. And we really liked this room. It has a much longer balcony. So there were two chairs and a table, but then also like a lounger. And we didn't really have any noise from the crew staircase that was right there. We had some really inconsiderate neighbors who were smoking on their balcony. So that was the only thing that made our room anything but just great. We loved it. I would look for that type of room again.
Did you blow the whistle on them?
I did.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
But it's sort of an intimidating thing when you do that.
Yeah, no, for sure.
The head of security came and interviewed me. And if you don't catch them, like if you don't see them exactly doing it, then it's hard for them to prove.
Yeah.
But
I want to go back to what you said a few minutes ago about like the motion activated in the bathroom or bedside or whatnot. Is that actually like a light that, so I was on a Princess cruise a couple of weeks ago, and when I stepped off the bed onto the ground, like a little light came on, I guess pathway lighting to the bathroom. Was it something like that you're talking about?
Yes. Okay. So I don't know how it is in the other rooms because ours was configured so differently. When I stepped off the bed on the right side, it would turn that light on. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like bright enough to wake anybody else up or anything like that. But yeah. So I assume in other rooms, it would be when you stepped into that hallway near the bathroom.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's talk about the dining on this 8-night cruise. And we'll start at the top where you mentioned that the Lido Marketplace had a little bit of work done to it. So how was the food there and the flow of passengers throughout your 8-night cruise?
I thought it was pretty good. They now have island systems, so you can cut in and or come over here to the salad bar and then go somewhere else. There were two of them. I don't know exactly how to describe them, but one and then some seating and then farther down another section of islands. So we ate there a couple of times. There were, you know, your bottleneck areas. The deli seemed to be kind of understaffed. And then if it was an omelet station, that was really popular. So you had to wait in a lot of lines there. But I got gelato every day at the Lido Marketplace. So
how about outside of there? You have like a Guy's Burger, Blue Iguana, the seafood in the back, and I think pizza's back there too.
Pretty much I ate almost everywhere possible on the ship. I didn't try the seafood shack, but I love Blue Iguana. I think that, and I don't know whether this is just something I didn't know about, but their breakfast burritos are so, so good. And I didn't know about them on previous cruises, so I'm glad that I figured that out. Yeah, we had pizza a couple of times. Obviously, we had some Guy's Burgers. So we did all of the the casual and some of the specialty dining that we could.
Very nice. How about the main dining room? What time dining did you have and how was the food and service in there throughout the week?
We did anytime dining. We only ate, I ate in there one time with my husband and then I ate one time by myself because I wanted to make sure I got the Carnival melting cake and he just didn't have any interest at that point. But I felt like all in all, and this just is probably natural because of our economy and everything like that, that portion sizes are getting a lot smaller, mm-hmm. especially with certain things. And we're not, you know, we don't need like enormous portions, but it was noticeable. And then also I felt like in some of the restaurants and bars, some of the staff seemed either understaffed or tired or something like that. Not in all of them. And we generally, you know, love the staff on cruise ships, but some of our favorite places, it took a long time to get our food. Mm-hmm. And that's how the main dining room sort of felt. We were in there for a long time. And sometimes that's because they're like dancing and
sure
doing all that. But yeah.
Outside of the main dining room, you said you had a couple of specialty restaurants there. How were they?
They were good. So we ate at Casino di Capitano, which is the Italian restaurant. I ate there for lunch one day too, which their lasagna is so good. I've got to figure out, it has like some steak or some kind of meat in it. And yeah, it's just it's a really good lunch option. But we ate there for dinner. We had a great time. It was just, again, we were in there forever because our service was pretty slow. Mm-hmm. And then it was our anniversary. So we did a night at the, we did the Fahrenheit 555 one night. We had some interesting neighbors who were really not happy with their food. And so that, you know, you sit pretty close to other people on cruise ships. So that made for an interesting night, but the food was great. It was really delicious. It's a good value, compared to what you would get on land. So that was that one. I did bonsai sushi on my own one night and that was really, it was a surprise. Like I'm eat sushi sometimes. I'm not like a connoisseur by any means, but their California roll, I mean, was delicious. Like I would get that just sort of as an appetizer some other time. So yeah, I think the only other specialty dining restaurant I didn't do was Gigi's, and I just couldn't get an early enough reservation one night. Mm-hmm. And so that's the one that I missed, but But otherwise, I could cover most of them.
Yeah, sounds like it. It's always awkward, too, when you're that close at a steakhouse or a nice restaurant and the person, the table next to you is raising hell. It just kind of makes you feel, it makes you feel awkward, too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And the Carnival staff was really doing everything that they could to try and make it better. And I just don't know that there was any making it better. Yeah. And after they left, we turned to the people on the other side of us and we're like, did you hear that? And they were like, no. So it was really just me and my husband and this unhappy couple for a while.
Yes. So, the entertainment, sounds like you had some entertainment there at the steakhouse, but, some entertainment over this 8-night cruise, how did it stack up for y'all?
I grew up dancing and I started off in college as a dance major and changed my mind. So I have a few friends or girls I knew in college who danced on cruise ships. And so I just typically tend to be a little bit of a snob about it. I think cruise ships have a lot of talent. And they just give them real trash material. But we did go see one of the shows. It was called Flick. It was like movie themes. My husband thought several of the scenes were real funny. So he wanted me to, I missed the beginning the first time he saw it. And then he made me come back and watch the beginning again. They were fine. I mean, everyone's very talented. It's just a strange, hard to follow plot. But we did some of that. We went to some of the other game shows. We went to Deal or No Deal, the Love and Marriage show. We meant to go to Family Feud, but it was one of those nights where we were like, we'll run up to the room and change or whatever. And we got up there and just ended up going to bed. But yeah, so we experienced multiple types of entertainment. There are also, you know, live musicians around. On this particular cruise, I don't feel like we got pulled in enough by the live musicians to sit like in one of the plazas or anything and listen to them. But they were all really talented. So.
Yeah, I've probably seen Flick at least 10 times now since 2016, I believe. And I still don't know what the hell's going on. You got the director running around with his viewfinder from all these different angles. And it like transitions from one movie to another. It's very, very hard to follow if you're not paying attention or if you have ADD.
Even if you are paying attention, yeah. I don't really think it makes that much sense. Yeah, but my husband really liked when he got hit by lightning in the beginning. He thought that was funny. So, yeah, and it was, I mean, but yeah.
Yeah. Some of those, like the effects are really cool on some of those shows. I'll give them that. I could take the singing, but
floating in the air. And, and I mean, she did a whole dance where the scarf was like they had fans. And so it was lifting up. I mean, they're really beautiful, but it's just the story and it's just not good.
I hear you. How about other things around the ship, maybe comedy shows or karaoke?
We did hit some karaoke. I do not enjoy performing karaoke, but I like to watch it until it just gets too cringe to sit there anymore. So we did catch a little bit of karaoke. We didn't go to comedy. The punchliner on the Vista is very small and it's like I think they convert it to like the disco or something sometimes, but there was always a line like around the hallway to get in there. And that's just, I'm not going to fight to do that. So we just ended up not doing that. On a past cruise, I drugged my husband to the piano bar, but he won't go with me anymore. So, and whoever the piano performer was on our sailing was sick a couple of nights. So he didn't perform nearly as many times. So we didn't enjoy that either. But
karaoke is always interesting because you start the night with a little Sinatra, Neil Diamond, then Friends in Low Places, maybe Toby Keith, I Love This Bar. Then it goes like Missy Elliott, Eminem, Ludacris, a nice progression.
Yes, you really do. And you get, I mean, and I don't know if it's always like a progression in talent wise, but You will get someone who really feels like they can sing Whitney Houston, and they cannot. I mean, not many of us can. So that's just a tall order, especially after you've had, you know, three Bahama Mamas at Red Frog.
Oh yeah, you're primed up and ready to go at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. How were the sea days on this sailing as far as crowds and congestion?
I mean, this ship was pretty crowded. We went in March, so everyone kept saying it's spring break cruise, it's spring break cruise. I would say the population wasn't as it's typical spring break as I thought it would be. It didn't seem to be like a ton of college kids or anything like that. But if there were lines starting before any of the restaurants opened, there would be lines forming. They all moved pretty quickly as far as the food went. But typically, there were lines around, and you notice people. The Vista does, and as I think the point of a lot of these bigger cruise ships now, they do have a lot of spaces where you can go and sit, you know, off of the Ocean Plaza or, you know, off of the various restaurants. So you just kind of have to be on the lookout for those less congested areas if that's what you're looking for. There's a pool off the back of the Vista, the Tides Pool. And if you went up the stairs and kind of around the corner, we found some like loungers that were out of the sun. And so for the first sea day, we spent a lot of time out there. By the last two sea days, other people had discovered our spots, so we had to find some different ones. But yeah, there are places to go if you're looking for that. We did do the Skyrider on a sea day, and we didn't wait for very long for that. I had to run back because I didn't have shoes or closed-toed shoes and shorts on. So I had to run back and change, but my husband did it. And it's a little bit more intense than I was prepared for, but I was not going to let the 8-year-old boy that I was racing against beat me. So I just went whole hog for that. We also did the water slides and there were, I mean, a bunch of kids doing those, but it wasn't ever like a line where I was like, well, I'm going to get out of this line.
Yeah.
But so there were lines, but nothing so much that it soured any of the day.
How about the IMAX theater?
Yeah, we didn't do that. No. It just seemed like a waste of the sunlight to go sit inside for a couple hours.
I agree. So let's see here. Let's talk about your ports of call you hit on this 8-night cruise, Amber Cove, San Juan, St. Thomas. And I can't read my writing. There was one more though.
St. Martin.
There you go. So what we'll do here is we'll start with your first one. Give us the port, give us the highlight, and we can go to the next one.
Okay. Our first one was Amber Cove. And if you've been there before, Carnival's obviously poured a lot of money into that port and, you know, just changed it and made this kind of resort right there. The thing that I really liked about it is we were there until like 5:30 or 6. And so we were able to kind of hang back a little bit after the initial rush of people getting off the boat. And then we walked over to the pool and we swam for a while. And then we came back and ate lunch actually on the boat. And then we, after lunch, went back out to the pool. And at that point, most of the people who had paid for umbrellas or paid for various things had gone back to the boat. And so the pool was pretty deserted. I mean, there were some people there, but it wasn't the crowd that was there in the morning. So that would be my tip with Amber Cove is if you can hang back or if you can wait and go later in the afternoon or go and come back, then the crowds kind of dissipate. So that was fun for us. And then next we went to San Juan, which I loved this port. I wasn't prepared for how beautiful it was. Just the different colored buildings and the flowers and all that. And we hung back a little bit and ate lunch on the ship. And there's a fort right on the point. You see it when you're coming in, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but I think it's Castillo San Felipe del Moro. And it's it's gorgeous. So we got off the boat and we knew what direction to walk in, and we walked that way. And all of a sudden, once you get out there, it's just these rolling green hills of just this beautiful landscape, and people are flying kites and kids are playing and all that. And there's these huge turrets where they used to put the cannons to protect the island. And you can walk up to them and take pictures. And a couple of them overlook this like white marble graveyard, which was it was a shock, but it's beautiful. And the water is just so, so blue. And then we paid $10 because it's a national park. And we just wandered around in that fort for a while and just took in the views. And it's a very Instagrammable place, if that's your thing. But yeah, that was one of my favorite things that we did. So
what does that walk to the fort from the cruise ship? 10, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, I would say 15. And it's a little bit of a walk. You could have caught like taxis or taken a specific tour there. But we were just like, we're going to walk in that direction. But yeah, I think it probably took us about 15 minutes. And it was pretty hot that day. Or it was kind of mild compared to the weather here. It was pretty mild. It was, I think, like in the upper 70s. But so we were tired when we got back, but we had earned our the rest of our food later on. Sure. We had earned guy's burger once we got back on. So.
And what was up next?
We hit St. Martin next. One thing I'll say about St. Martin, that initial cruise port, when you get off the boat, there is no shade in that area. And it is very hot. So if you're planning on like shopping in that cruise area, you need to make sure you have a hat or something. Because we saw some people who had really had some negative effects of that sun. And there's like several bars and stuff right there that people were just hanging out at, drinking and stuff like that. But we went to the left off of the cruise port and caught a water taxi. And I think that beach is Old Bay Beach or Grand Bay Beach. It's one of those. I should have written it down. But it's really, really beautiful. You get kind of hassled right there to buy chairs. But what we wanted to do that day was just really sit on a beach. And so that's what we did. We walked down a ways and ended up buying a chair, some chairs and an umbrella. I think we paid $20 and we got them for, I don't know, 2 hours. And so we sat there and swam in the water. It's beautiful water. If we ever go back to St. Martin, I would want to explore more. So we were on the Dutch side of the island because it's that island that's owned by Denmark and France. Mm-hmm. And I would want to explore more and see the French side. Everyone was talking about going to that beach where the airplanes fly like right over your head. but that seemed loud to us, but I don't know. Maybe that's where we'll try next time.
Yeah, I think that's Grand Bay Beach. There was a hill there overlooking turquoise water.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's Grand Bay Beach. I think you are correct.
All of our ports, when we have been on cruises before, we've always had to leave at like 3. And so that always seems like a rush. So all of these, we got to stay until like 5:30 or 6, except for St. Thomas, which was next, but we ended up staying a little bit longer than we had planned. But, so that was really, it was neat to just have longer in the ports.
And how was St. Thomas?
St. Thomas was great. We did a helmet dive at Coral World, which they put the big helmet, the weighted helmets on you, and it, you know, traps, I'm probably not going to understand all the technology involved, but traps the air in. And then they lead you, you go underwater, you can breathe, they're pumping oxygen into your helmet, and you kind of walk around and can look at the sea life and everything like that. The day that we went, there was a lot of, the visibility wasn't great, which wasn't their fault. And there was a lot of swells. So, that made it a little bit tricky. We were glad we did it for the experience. Now we know what it's like and it's not intimidating, or at least for us, it wasn't intimidating. And we'd like to do it again. The little course that they walked us around on was a little short for our liking. We would have liked to have done a little bit longer of a trek. Mm-hmm. But it was a good experience. And after that, we, Coral World has like dolphin encounters and has an aquarium and turtles and all that. So we walked around there for a little bit, but then, it's right next to Cokie Beach, on St. Thomas. And so we walked over there, and swam in the water until it was time for us, to go back to the ship. Cokie Beach was real, crowded. And I think it's, just with St. Thomas becoming more popular, people are finding these beaches that before have been more like secrets. Cause I heard before that Cokie Beach was more like raw, or that people, not as many people knew about it, but when we were there, definitely a lot of people knew about it. But, we would like to go back to St. Thomas again. It's a real beautiful, it's somewhere we'd like to explore more. So, so all in all, it was a good experience. Yeah. Definitely spiked our curiosity for going back.
When they dropped you down with that helmet on, do you know how far underwater you went?
Oh gosh, I should.
Like 20 feet or you think,
yeah,
or if you had to guess?
Something like that. Yeah. 20 feet. Yeah. Down to the bottom. And then there's divers with you. So the first, like, I'm pretty claustrophobic, and the first, like, you're walking down a ladder and then they put the helmet on you. And so that first few seconds of like, you do kind of freak out. But once you get down there and realize like, I can breathe, there's plenty of oxygen, then it just seems to be okay. Like it's sort of like getting your bearings when you're snorkeling. Like at first you're like, this is no fun. And then once your body kind of gets used to it, it starts to be more enjoyable.
You had two sea days back to Port Canaveral. Did you experience any bad weather out there? I know it's been kind of hit or miss in the Atlantic Ocean in March.
Yeah. I mean, there were pretty big swells all along. This was the rockiest trip cruise I've ever been on. We got a little sick on the way coming in. But yeah, we hit some big swells, no storms or anything like that. And then once we got back closer to Florida, it was perfect. It was milk glass. It was a rocky trip back for sure. We had to stop outside of the Bahamas to evacuate someone who had a medical emergency. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was not without the excitement on the way back.
Sounds like it. Earlier you were talking about you went into that non-smoking casino. How bad was the smoke like in and around the regular casino?
I think it was pretty bad. I'm pretty sensitive to smoke. And I think when, you know, you have these kind of sea days and people are in there all the time, it was pretty bad. I walked through there, you know, on port days and did notice that it seemed like they were, I don't know, piping the air out or piping new air in or something to try and make it less like a bowling alley. But it was pretty bad. What I liked about the Vista is if you go up one floor, because on some cruise ships, you have to walk through the smoking casino. Mm-hmm. But if you go up one floor on the Vista above the casino, you could walk over it and they still had it, like you could look down into it. So it was kind of a nice illusion, but they had it kind of glassed off. So you couldn't, you know, there wasn't smoke all the way through, the other restaurants, but, I mainly spent time in the non-smoking casino, and I've heard a lot of other people say it's really hot in there. I mean, it's a smaller room off of the main casino, but it did get hot on like nights where there were tons of people in there. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I didn't think it was unbearable. If your goal is to gamble and not be around smoke at all, then it's definitely a solution to that.
I got to know, do you play the Buffalo?
Yes, that was my favorite one. Yes. And I won $250 on that Buffalo.
Nice. I played a few dollars on Sun Princess, and the lady who was maybe, I guess, catty corner from my buddy and I hit for $10,000. She got the jackpot.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. It's like, there you go.
One night, there were two ladies sitting next to me at the other two Buffalo machines. And I'm like, if I hit, I want to switch machines.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, and this is probably not true at all, but I feel like there's some sort of like technology where it's like, well, she just won. She doesn't need to win again. Mm-hmm. And so these women were just sitting there. And I was like, are you going to play that machine? And she was like, yeah, I am. And I was like, okay, I was like, I'm real superstitious. So I was just going to move. And they were like, but you're winning. And I was like, I know, but I'm not going to keep winning. But
yeah, there's always that too. So you get back to Port Canaveral and you get off the ship. How was the debark process? And is Carnival doing the digital debark on this one?
Yes, they were. So debarking was probably more entertaining than the cruise ship shows, but there were a lot of people on our ship who did not want to pay their gambling debts, and so they were getting kind of. Or there was at least one that we personally ran into on our way out, and then there were a lot of people trying to cut in line to get to their. To their family members and some other people, not my husband and I, but who were very unhappy about them doing that. But all in all, it took us from stepping off the ship to the curb. It took us 16 minutes. Okay. So it wasn't bad. They used the facial recognition. We self de-embarked. So we walked our suitcases off. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say is that the earlier you can go, which I think most people want to get off early, but we got picked up by a shuttle to take us to the airport, and we picked up some passengers from another cruise ship as well. And so when we were coming back around, we could see the vista, and it looked like there was a huge, a lot of congestion mm-hmm. at that point getting off the ship. People are just waiting on the gangways. So if you can get off earlier, if you can, carry your own luggage off or something like that, then I would do that for sure, just because of the large amounts of people getting off at once.
That's a great tip there. Do you have any other ones for someone who may be sailing Carnival Vista or doing that Eastern Caribbean run?
Sure. I think just with these bigger ships and I don't know. I think cruise ships are commercialized anyway, but you can think that there aren't like little special like places that you can find or like tricks that you can figure out. But I think that there are. I mean, like, for example, I figured out, and again, maybe this is something that like more seasoned Carnival cruisers know, but like the coffee in the Havana bar was great, and I could get it faster than I could by waiting in that like long line at the Java Blue Cafe or whatever. And so that's where I would go every day. And like I said, we would find, we found our spot off of one of the, a couple of the restaurants. So we would sit out there and watch the sunset or as we sailed along or whatever. So I think you can find special places even among these big mammoth cruise ships that are the only thing coming out these days. You can find, special things or tricks and that sort of stuff. So I would say look for that and enjoy yourself.
Yeah. What was the biggest highlight on this 8-day cruise for y'all?
I would say that, well, I have two. One, this was kind of strange. It's weird that this is a highlight, but I think I'll always remember this. So like in St. Thomas, we ended up not leaving when we were supposed to because I've heard that they were looking for these two women. I don't exactly know all the details, so I won't even speculate. But for some reason, we couldn't leave at the time we were supposed to. And we were nose to nose or back to nose or whatever to the Carnival Celebration. And so they ended up being able to leave before us. And so their captain just sort of moved the celebration around us and left St. Thomas. And so we were on our balcony, and at first the celebration just like blared its horn and scared the living daylights out of my husband and I, but then they came around the other side of us. So we're parallel to them or whatever. And it was crazy that, it was a weird thing because everyone was out on their balconies waving and dancing and like all this sort of stuff. And it's like, I don't know why it was so fun, but it was like we were in this shared experience. Yeah. And you're facing a bunch of people on mm-hmm. a cruise ship. You're on a cruise ship. So it was like, I mean, everybody, they were honking their horns and all that. So it's a silly one, but that's a highlight. The other highlight for me, of course, is just being with my husband, us being together. But really, like in the mornings, our balcony, we would just sit out there and watch as we'd pull into these ports. And they're just really beautiful. And so that was just a really special thing that we got to do on this trip.
And to put a bow on this interview, your final thoughts of Carnival Vista.
I really love Vista. I have a special heart or place in my heart for the smaller ships. So I don't know that we'll be going up from here. Maybe we will. I don't know. We might not have any other choice, but we had a great time on Carnival Vista. And if you're considering her, I would say go for it.
Very good. We've been talking with Julia about her 8-night cruise on Carnival Vista. Thank you so much for stopping by and sharing your review, Julia.
Of course. Anytime.
All right, Dougie, let's see what we got for you, buddy.
Cruise Radio is produced at the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. Get cruise news, ship reviews, and money-saving tips every Thursday on Cruise Radio. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show. If you want to help spread the word, give Cruise Radio a 5-star review. Find Cruise Radio where you listen to your favorite podcast or online at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.